date for this Thursday, January 21st, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up in the next few minutes, some of the articles that we will be reading include, "There is nothing for us to rework. Biden is inheriting a non-existent vaccine plan from Trump administration," sources say. More briefings and COVID-19 data dashboard, part of Biden's pandemic transparency push. Improve vaccine distribution, expand testing, and reopen schools, Biden issues pandemic plan. "There's enough vaccine for 100 million doses pledge," says White House coronavirus coordinator. California officials say providers can resume administering Moderna vaccine from a specific lot after pause. Studies suggest vaccinated people protected from new COVID-19 variants. CDC to extend pandemic eviction moratorium until March 31st. A new COVID-19 challenge, mutations rise along with cases. "We know this is real. New clinics aid virus long haulers." Those are some of the articles we'll be reading. First, we'll take a look at today's numbers. From the Texas Health and Human Services website, Ector County confirmed cases 6,644, probable cases 5,825, fatalities 271. Estimated active cases 1,001, estimated recovered 11,194. Midland County confirmed cases 13,334. Fatalities 203. Estimated active cases 1,671. Estimated recovered 11,460. And from the Texas Tribune, average new cases decreased by 1,130 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 20th, 25,512 new confirmed cases and 5,017 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 236 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 30th, 13,870 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 20 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 20th, 450 new deaths were reported. Now here are coronavirus briefs. The United States reported 178,255 new coronavirus infections on Wednesday, bringing the total to at least 24,434,283 since the pandemic began, according to Johns Hopkins University data. Another 4,229 virus-related fatalities were also reported Wednesday, the country's second highest daily total. The COVID-19 death toll in the U.S. now stands at 406,001. At least 35,990,150 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 16,525,281 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U.S. could reach a 500,000 COVID-19 deaths by mid-February, according to the CDC, but the agency's new leader said that healthier days lie ahead. China announced domestic travel restrictions to curb the spread of the virus ahead of the Lunar New Year as one Beijing district went into lockdown. The U.K. is giving 200 vaccines every minute, says Health Secretary, as it reports record death toll. Vaccinating all residents 65 and older may take up to 5 months, says California health official. And now to our articles. "There is nothing for us to rework. Biden is inheriting a non-existent vaccine plan from the Trump administration," sources say, from CNN's MJ Lee. Newly sworn-in President Joe Biden and his advisors are inheriting no coronavirus vaccine distribution plan to speak of from the Trump administration, sources tell CNN, posing a significant challenge for the new White House. The Biden administration has promised to try to turn the COVID-19 pandemic around and drastically speed up the pace of vaccinating Americans against the virus. But in the immediate hours following Biden being sworn into office on Wednesday, sources with direct knowledge of the new administration's COVID-related work told CNN one of the biggest shocks that the Biden team had to digest during the transition period was what they saw as a complete lack of vaccine distribution strategy under former President Donald Trump, even weeks after multiple vaccines were approved for use in the United States. "There is nothing for us to rework. We are going to have to build everything from scratch," one source said. Another source described the moment that it became clear that the Biden administration would have to essentially start from square one because there simply was no plan as, wow, just further affirmation of complete incompetence. CNN had previously reported that the Biden team's most urgent concerns on COVID-19 include potential vaccine supply problems, coordination between federal and local governments, as well as funding, staffing, and other resource needs for local governments. That is in addition to the emerging COVID variants, which the new White House, in consultation with scientists and experts, is watching warily. Biden has made clear that slowing down the spread of COVID-19 and getting 100 million vaccine shots into Americans' arms in his first 100 days in office are of utmost priority. More briefings and COVID-19 data dashboard, part of Biden's pandemic transparency push. From CNN Health's Maggie Fox. The Biden White House is pledging to communicate more, and more honestly, about the coronavirus pandemic with the aim of restoring the trust of the American people. The first step will be a return to regular briefings. CDC briefings had been notably absent since last March. In other disease emergencies, the CDC has provided regular briefings, often several a week, with top experts. The Trump White House stopped them after the CDC's top respiratory specialist, Dr. Nancy Messonnier, warned of worsening spread and disruptions, angering then-President Trump. Her predictions came true, but CDC officials have held only a handful of briefings since then. The White House Coronavirus Task Force briefed regularly for a few months, but those briefings petered out by June and came only sporadically after that. The federal government should be the source of truth for the public to get clear, accessible, and scientifically accurate information about COVID-19. We will be honest, transparent, and straightforward with the American people to rebuild that trust, White House Coronavirus Coordinator Jeff Zients told reporters Wednesday. To that end, Zients said the new administration would be taking a number of steps to provide clarity and insight into the pandemic, including regular expert-led science-based public briefings by HHS, CDC, and the COVID-19 White House response team. On Thursday, President Biden will also issue an executive order to enhance the collection, sharing, and analysis of data. As part of that, the CDC will maintain a public dashboard tracking real-time data on COVID-19 cases, testing, vaccinations, and hospital admissions at a national and state level. There have been misunderstandings about much of the data generated about the pandemic. For instance, CNN relies more heavily on data from Johns Hopkins University about diagnoses and deaths than it does on the CDC. Improve vaccine distribution, expand testing, and reopen schools. Biden issues pandemic plan. From CNN's Betsy Klein. President Joe Biden's first full day in office Thursday will focus on COVID-19, rolling out his national strategy for the pandemic amid the Trump administration response he inherited, with record high cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. "There is a lot of work to do," officials said, "and it's actually so much worse than they thought." For almost a year now, Americans could not look to the federal government for any strategy, let alone a comprehensive approach to respond to COVID. And we've seen the tragic costs of that failure as President Biden steps into office today. That'll change tomorrow, White House COVID coordinator Jeff Zients said Wednesday. The Biden strategy, he said, will be a fundamentally different approach from the Trump administration and will be driven by science, data, and public health, not politics. Here's a preview of the actions we can expect. Executive order on supplies for vaccination, testing, and PPE. Presidential memorandum directing FEMA to increase federal reimbursement from 75% to 100%. Executive order to establish COVID-19 pandemic testing board to expand testing supply and increase access. Executive order to establish development of therapeutics. Executive order to enhance U.S. collection, production, sharing, and analysis of data. Executive order to direct the Department of Education and HHS to provide guidance on safely reopening and operating of schools, child care providers, and institutions of higher education. Presidential memorandum directing FEMA to offer reimbursement for eligible emergency supplies, such as PPE for schools. Executive order calling on OSHA to release clear guidance on COVID-19, decide whether to establish emergency temporary standards, and directs OSHA to enforce worker health and safety requirements. Executive order to require mask wearing in airports and on certain modes of transportation, including many trains, planes, maritime vessels, and intercity buses. This order also requires the international travelers to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test prior to coming into the U.S. Executive order to ensure equitable pandemic response and recovery, including the creation of the COVID-19 Health Equity Task Force. Presidential directive to restore America's leadership, support the international pandemic response effort, promote resilience for future threats, and advance global health security and the global health security agenda. There's enough vaccine for 100 million doses pledge, says White House coronavirus coordinator, from CNN's Maggie Fox. White House coronavirus coordinator Jeff Zients said he thinks the vaccine supply will be adequate to meet the Biden administration's goal of 100 million shots delivered in 100 days. In terms of specific projections from the manufacturers, you know, we know that there is sufficient supply to do the 100 million shots in the 100 days, Zients told reporters in a briefing ahead of the release of the new national strategy for the COVID-19 response and pandemic preparedness. Zients also pledged to clear up confusion about how many vaccines each state will get and when. You know, in terms of allocations, our systems will have the equity as the cornerstone of how we do allocation, Zients said. We will work to provide projections on supply. We hear over and over from governors and local leaders that they just don't know what supply is coming and can't plan. We will absolutely, across the next few days, to get our arms around what's going on, make sure that we are communicating with states and localities so that they can prepare effectively, Zients added. We clearly need strong coordination to ensure supply availability and information sharing, and that's what we will do, he said. Some background. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged to provide 100 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine in his first 100 days in office. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the president's newly installed chief medical advisor, said on Friday that Biden's goal is quite feasible. You still optimistic that we can get 100 million doses in 100 days? NBC's Craig Melvin asked Fauci during an interview on the Today Show. I really do think so, Fauci responded. California officials say providers can resume administering Moderna vaccine from a specific lot after the pause. From CNN Health's Andrea Diaz. California health officials have given providers the all clear to immediately resume administering the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine from a specific lot after pausing earlier this week due to possible allergic reactions. The state's health department previously said it was aware of fewer than 10 people who received shots from the lot and required health experts found no scientific basis to continue the pause, state epidemiologist Dr. Erica Pan said. Studies suggest vaccinated people protected from new COVID-19 variants, from CNN's Maggie Fox. New research out this week provides reassuring evidence that people vaccinated against coronavirus will be protected against emerging new variants of the virus. Two teams tested two of the new variants against blood taken from people who had received the full two-course vaccine dose of either the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine. While the mutations in the new variants of the virus, one first seen in Britain and another first identified in South Africa, did allow them to evade some of the immunity induced by vaccination, it was far from a complete escape, the two teams reported separately. A team led by Dr. Michael Nusenwig of the Rockefeller University tested plasma taken from 20 people who got two doses of either the Pfizer-BioNTech or Moderna vaccine as part of clinical trials. They found the vaccines produced strong antibody responses, as well as cells that keep producing new antibodies for months or years. We measured their antibody responses to the wild-type virus. Then we took their plasmas and measured them against the variants, Nusenwig told CNN. Wild-type virus is a catch-all name for the virus generally circulating that is not changed enough to be designated a variant. Different mutations in the viruses did allow some escape from some types of antibodies, but the bodies of the volunteers threw an army of different types of antibodies at the viruses, the team reported in a preprint study, not peer-reviewed, published online. When you start putting all these mixtures of antibodies together, what it means is that together they can take care of the variants, Nusenwig said. Even though they had a reduced effect, overall response was so overwhelming that it should not matter, he said. What we really want to do with these vaccines is keep people out of the hospital. They are extremely likely to do that, irrespective, Nusenwig added. Eventually, the vaccines should be updated, but the new mRNA vaccines made by Pfizer and Moderna can be changed very quickly. Should the vaccines be tweaked, he asked. Probably, but that doesn't mean that they won't be effective. CDC to extend pandemic eviction moratorium until March 31st, from CNN's Dave Alsup. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will extend an order preventing the eviction of some people from their homes until March 31st, the agency's new director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, said Wednesday. The COVID-19 pandemic has presented a historic threat to our nation's health. It has also triggered a housing affordability crisis that disproportionately affects some communities, Walensky said in a statement. Despite extensive mitigation efforts, COVID-19 continues to spread in America at a concerning pace. We must act to get cases down and keep people in their homes and out of congregate settings, like shelters, where COVID-19 can take an even stronger foothold. The incoming Biden administration had highlighted the eviction moratorium as one of its key targets on day one. It was set to expire at the end of the month. What impact will it have? This means that a landlord, owner of a residential property, or other person with a legal right to pursue an eviction or a possessory action cannot evict for non-payment of rent any covered person from the residential property in any U.S. state or U.S. territory where the order applies, the CDC says on its website. The order only covers limited numbers of people. Tenants and other residents must show that they have exhausted best efforts to get government help to pay rent, earn $99,000 a year or less, and cannot make payment because of a loss of income or extraordinary medical costs. To qualify, the tenant must also be trying to pay at least something and must swear that they will be made homeless by eviction or forced to move to congregate living settings. A new COVID-19 challenge, mutations rise along with cases, by Marilyn Marchioni, Associated Press, published January 20th. The race against the virus that causes COVID-19 has taken a new turn. Mutations are rapidly popping up, and the longer it takes to vaccinate people, the more likely it is that a variant can elude current tests, treatments, and vaccines could emerge. The coronavirus is becoming more genetically diverse, and health officials say the high rate of new cases is the main reason. Each new infection gives the virus a chance to mutate as it makes copies of itself, threatening to undo the progress made so far to control the pandemic. On Friday, the World Health Organization urged more effort to detect new variants. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said a new version first identified in the United Kingdom may become more dominant in the U.S. by March, Although it doesn't cause more severe illness, it will lead to more hospitalizations and deaths just because it spreads much more easily, said the CDC, warning of a new phase of exponential growth. We're taking it all very seriously, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the U.S. government's top infectious disease expert, said Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press. We need to do everything we can now to get the transmission as low as we possibly can, said Harvard University's Dr. Michael Mina. The best way to prevent mutant strains from emerging is to slow transmission. So far, vaccines seem to remain effective, but there are signs that some of the new mutations may undermine tests for the virus and reduce the effectiveness of antibody drugs as treatments. We're in a race against time because the virus may stumble upon a mutation that makes it more dangerous, said Dr. Pardis Sabeti, an evolutionary biologist at the Broad Institute of MIT in Harvard. Younger people may be less willing to wear masks, shun crowds, and take other steps to avoid infection because the current strain doesn't seem to make them very sick. But in one mutational change, it might, she warned. Sabeti documented a change in the Ebola virus during the 2014 outbreak that made it much worse. We know this is real. New clinics aid virus long haulers, by Jennifer Peltz, Associated Press, published January 20th. The 54-year-old New York City school secretary didn't have any underlying health problems when she caught the coronavirus in March, and she recovered at her Queens home. But some symptoms lingered. Fatigue she never experienced during years of rising at 5 a.m. for work. Pain, especially in her hands and wrists. An altered sense of taste and smell that made food unappealing. And a welling depression. After 8 months of suffering, she made her way to Jamaica Hospital Medical Center, to a clinic specifically for post-COVID-19 care. I felt myself in kind of a hole, and I couldn't look on the bright side, Musa said. She did not feel helped by visits to other doctors, but it was different at the clinic. They validated the way I felt, she said. That has helped me push through everything I'm fighting. The clinic is one of dozens of such facilities that have cropped up around the U.S. to address a puzzling aspect of COVID-19, the effects that can stubbornly afflict some people weeks or months after the infection itself has subsided. The program's approaches vary, but they share the goal of trying to comprehend, treat, and give credence to patients who cannot get free of the virus that has infected more than 24 million Americans and killed about 400,000. We know this is real, said Dr. Alan Roth, who oversees the Jamaica Hospital Clinic. He has been grappling with body pain, fatigue, and brain fog, characterized by occasional forgetfulness, since his own relatively mild bout with COVID-19 last March. Like so much else in the pandemic, the scientific picture of so-called long haulers is still developing. It's not clear how prevalent long-term COVID problems are or why some patients keep suffering while others do not. Current indications are that up to 30% of patients continue to have significant problems that intrude on daily life 2 to 3 weeks after testing positive. Perhaps as many as 10% are still afflicted 3 to 6 months later, according to Dr. Wesley Self, a Vanderbilt University emergency physician and researcher who co-wrote a July report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Doctors have known for months that intensive care patients can face extended recoveries, but many COVID-19 long haulers were never critically ill. At the University of Texas Medical Branch's post-COVID-19 clinic in Clear Lake, patients range in age from 23 to 90. Half were never hospitalized, said the clinic's director, Dr. Justin Seashore. They were told they should be feeling better, and they didn't, he said. Instead, they were left with fatigue, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, difficulty concentrating, or other problems that they did not have before. Some were told they would have to be on oxygen for the rest of their lives. A highlight has been helping many of them get off it through treatment that can include respiratory therapy, occupational therapy, mental health check-ins, and more, Seashore said. Long-term COVID-19 care has been launched in settings ranging from big research hospitals like New York's Mount Sinai, which has over 1,600 patients, to St. John's Well Child and Family Center, a network of community clinics in South Los Angeles. Rather than focusing specifically on patients who still feel sick, St. John's aims to schedule a physical exam, a behavioral health visit, and monthly follow-ups with everyone who tests positive at one of its clinics, CEO Jim Mangia said. Nearly 1,000 patients have come in for exams. Since Luciana Flores contracted the virus in June, she has been contending with back pain, stomach problems, shortness of breath, and worry. The mother of three lost her job at a laundry since the pandemic, and she doesn't feel well enough to look for work. St. John's has helped, she said, by diagnosing and treating a bacterial infection in her digestive system. I think it's really important for other patients to receive the same care, Flores, 38, said through a Spanish interpreter. I don't feel the same. I don't think anything will ever be the same, but there's no other way around it. I have to keep moving forward. There's no proven cure for long-term COVID problems, but clinics aim to offer relief, not least by giving patients somewhere to turn if their usual doctor can't help. We wanted to create a place that patients could get answers or feel heard, even if there are still unanswered questions, said Dr. Denise Luchenmansing, a clinical lead physician at Yale Medicine's post-COVID recovery program. At the Jamaica Hospital program, patients get mental health assessments, a lung specialist's attention, and physical exams that delve deeper than most into their lifestyles, personal circumstances, and sources of stress. Several hundred people have been treated so far, Roth said. The idea is to help patients build their own healing capacity, said Dr. Wayne Jonas, former director of the National Institute of Health's Office of Alternative Medicine. He is now with the Samuel E. Foundation, a California-based nonprofit that works with the hospital on marrying alternative ideas with conventional medicine. The long haulers get exercise and diet plans and group or individual mental health sessions. Recommendations for supplements, breathing exercises, and meditation are also likely. That's in addition to any prescriptions, referrals, or primary care follow-ups that are deemed necessary. We're not just saying it's all in your head and we're going to throw herbs and spices at you, Roth said. With no tidy, proven answer for the complex of symptoms, we do a common sense approach and take the best of what's out there to treat these people. Busa got a test that determined she has sleep apnea, which causes people to stop breathing while asleep and often feel fatigued when awake. She is getting a device for that and is using a wrist braces and getting injections to ease her pain. Her program also includes psychotherapy appointments, supplements, and new daily routines of walking, riding a stationary bike, and writing in a journal about what she has to feel grateful for. Busa feels she is coming along, especially in terms of her mood, and credits the clinic. There's light at the end of the tunnel, she said, and there are people and doctors out there who can relate to you. That's your coronavirus update for this Thursday, January 21st, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. Coming up next, we'll bring you Healthy Living Magazine. Then at 2 o'clock, USA Today with National News. Local news at 3 o'clock follows, and we'll be bringing you these stories and more. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, calendar debate starts with reading struggles report. Pfluger discusses next steps for GOP in Dem-controlled Congress. More than 100 oil companies sought bankruptcy protection in 2020. From the Odessa American, trustees vote to end Ector contract. ORMC administers initial COVID-19 vaccine. Annual Shrimp Fest postponed until 2022. Those articles and more at 3 o'clock and the Wall Street Journal at 6. Then at 7 o'clock tonight, we'll have the first broadcast of this week's Texas Monthly Archives. And in this program, will bring you some things that relate to a couple of different things that are happening this week. Of course, the first is the inauguration date, January 20th. And looking back at the past 12 months or so, the incredibly difficult year that we've had, and the most difficult in our lifetime's history, but that how we have gone through other difficult times before. And specifically, there is one article that was written in Texas Monthly in 1998 that looks back at America and Texas in 1968, which was a very difficult year, and gives us some context for what we're going through now and looking back at what we went through then. The article regarding 1968, of course, references a very large figure in that year, Lyndon Johnson. So the remainder of the articles for that hour of this program relates to another date that is occurring this week. And that is Saturday, January 23rd, is the 47th anniversary of Lyndon Johnson's death. So we will be reading articles during the hour as well from contemporaries who gave their recollections about Lyndon Johnson, as well as other things about the Johnson administration during the 1960s. Texas Monthly Archives, tonight at 7 o'clock, and of course it will be broadcast again at our usual times, Sunday afternoon at 1, and then Monday morning at 1. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll return for a Friday edition at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Be well and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 58 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the audio reading service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from the Health Magazine, and I'll begin with a story by Jennifer King Lindley, called LEAP. Making a meaningful change in your life can be daunting, but it can also be refreshing and invigorating, setting you on a path to a richer, deeper experience in the year ahead. Here are some ideas and some inspiration to help begin your transformation. How to prioritize your well-being. Soak up this insight and advice from Ebony Butler, PhD psychologist, food relationship strategist. Why do women have such a hard time with self-care? My clients often say, but I have to do all the work things, the mom things, the wife things. Everyone else needs comes first. I work with women to help them realize they are worthy of good care too. You can't show up for others if you don't show up for yourself. You wouldn't give someone a burned out candle as a gift. That is all we have to offer if we get too depleted. Have you struggled with this yourself? As a Black woman, the idea that we are supposed to do for others is ingrained over generations. My mother took care of other people for a living, as did her mother. There's the stereotype of the mammy matriarch, the one who looks after everybody else. This becomes expected of Black women, and sometimes you internalize that message. It goes deep. So where do we begin to change? It takes a mindset shift, a decision to make yourself a priority now and not wait for some perfect time in the future. A perfect time never comes. Choose the lowest hanging fruit. It might be packing yourself a healthier lunch or going for a walk. When you start with small wins, you gain confidence. You realize the world around you still functions. What should be some top priorities in everyone's self-care? From good sleep flows everything, your mood, your appetite, your energy. I make sure to get in 7 hours. Sometimes I have to tell myself, forget those dirty dishes. Rest is more important. I also encourage clients to add more nutritious foods to their diet. We have long focused on bad foods to restrict. That approach hasn't worked and has messed up our relationship with food. Instead, ask yourself, how can I add more vegetables to my plate? How can I shop for whole foods? You feel more control. Over time, these nutritious choices will naturally crowd out other things. What happens if, okay, when we blow it? Treat yourself with grace and compassion. If you binge on Netflix and chips instead of going to the gym, recognize that this isn't the end of the world. Then ask yourself, what are the things that got in the way of me doing what I intended to do? Take note without judgment. Adjust your plan for tomorrow. Guilt and shame just hold you back. Well, here's a true story by Jennifer McDonald's 38. I did a 180. When I started making my own wine at home in 2014, my friends and family kept saying, "This is good. Would you ever make it into a career?" I had a successful career in human resources, but wine was my passion. And I got a master's degree in agribusiness, and I started taking classes in chemistry. Once I had all the preparation under my belt, I felt ready to get Jenny Dawn Cellars, the first urban winery in Wichita, Kansas, off the ground. There were challenges. I had to walk and talk to 9 different banks to get a loan and speak to hundreds of investors before 5 came aboard. As the first African-American woman winemaker in Kansas, I also felt a lot of racism and discrimination. I've been very discouraged at different points of my journey. But early on, I got a tattoo on my wrist that reads, "Have faith, never give up." Seeing it every day kept me inspired. So did feeling like my business is bigger than me. There's a lot of diversity in the wine industry, and I want to open doors for others. How to make over your self-esteem. Everyone has insecurities, says Joyce Martyr, LCPC, founder of the Urban Balance, a national counseling practice. Once we recognize the voice of our inner critic, we can learn to talk to ourselves in a different way. Here, she gives guidance for negotiating a few familiar hang-ups. You feel down when someone you hear about someone else's life is perfect. If there is one thing I've learned from being a therapist for 2 decades, it is that we all have our problems, even people who look outwardly like they have it all. So stay in your lane. Reflect on your wins. What have you done recently that you are proud of? Embrace the abundance theory. Your friend obtaining success doesn't mean you will have less of it. There's plenty of success to go around. You belittle your accomplishments. We have a hard time acknowledging our successes. We feel like we have to apologize for them so that other people don't feel threatened. We say things like, "They only promoted me because I hung around so long." But you are not honoring yourself. You are teaching other people to think less of you. Next time you receive a compliment, look the person in the eye, smile, and simply say, "Thank you. I am happy too." Revel in the moment. It gets easier with practice. You nitpick your body in the mirror. Instead of scowling at your cellulite, develop the habit of practicing gratitude for all your body does for you. For example, maybe you think, "I don't love my midsection, but when I look at it, I'm reminded where my 2 beautiful daughters grew." How amazing is that? You might thank your feet for carrying you through your first ever 5K, and your eyes for allowing you to watch the sunrise. You beat yourself up over small mistakes. Ask yourself how you would talk to a friend who did the same thing. You would be empathetic and supportive. Speak to yourself that same way. For example, if you forget about an appointment, you might say, "Everyone has done that. Don't be so hard on yourself." How about you set a reminder on your phone so you don't make that same mistake again? Here's another true story by Amber Baldwin, 49. I downsized way down. I used to work 60 to 100 hours each week in my corporate finance job, but I wasn't taking care of myself. When I learned at a routine checkup that I was borderline for diabetes, heart issues, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure, I realized I needed a lot less stress in my life. Within 2 months, I put my house up for sale and bought a 26-foot RV and sold everything I owned. I was scared of the unknown, of camping by myself. Even that, my new RV would break down and leave me stranded. But I kept telling myself, on the other side of fear is your greatest reward. 3 years later, I've happily traveled to 33 states, Canada and Mexico, and have no end in sight. I now mentor others on how to finance a full-time travel lifestyle and start an online business on the road. It's easy to get overwhelmed when you feel your dream is too big, but when you break it down into steps, it becomes doable. How to commit to your friendships. Our pals often fall to the bottom of a winding to-do list. But research shows that friendships are actually the relationships that bring us the most undiluted joy, says psychologist and friendship expert Marissa Franco, PhD. And here are some ways to bolster your connections, ranging from easy to intense, but it's so worth it. Try repotting. Maybe you have a colleague you'd like to become better friends with. Just as with a plant, change the pot to give your room for friendship to grow, says Franco. Find a different setting to spend time together and ask if she wants to check out a sculpture garden or a new coffee place. You'll see a different side of each other, a first step toward a deeper relationship. Schedule an ongoing activity. A standing date on your calendar builds buddy time into your routine. I created a wellness group with a group of friends, says Franco. They meet weekly to do things like meditate and hike together. Seeing each other so regularly really boosts our connection. If time is tight, multitask. You can grocery shop or walk your dogs and catch up at the same time. Keep it fresh. With old friends, you can fall in a too comfy rut. Let's have lunch, repeat. Let's make a point to try new things, says Rachel Wickerson Miller, author of The Art of Showing Up and How to Be There for Yourself and Your People. It can be as simple as let's read the same book and discuss it, or make a new dessert. And catch the details. In our buzzing 5G world, attention is getting scarcer, yet it's what we crave from others. When you really listen to a friend, it'll bring you closer. Wilkerson Miller has an old school suggestion. Take notes, jot down the addictive podcast she recommends, the name of her weird boss, and when her family will be revisiting. We think we will naturally remember all this stuff, but we usually don't. Next time you see your friend, tell her your thoughts about that podcast. Your notes can also serve as a snapshot of your friendship at that moment, which is really nice. And show vulnerability. Nothing cements a friendship more than being present when the other person needs you. Stop by with a thermos of tea and open ears at the end of a hard day. Send a supportive text before a nerve-wracking interview. Be sure to reach out to pals when you are struggling. Ask for support from other asking for support from other communicates, "I trust you, I feel close to you." It is strong glue. We overestimate the risk of being vulnerable and underestimate its rewards. Another true story of a person that took a leap. Dior Viargas, 35. I stopped hiding my mental illness. I've had major depression and suicidal thoughts since I was a child. For years, I did not share my mental illness with anyone. I didn't want to burden my family and was fearful of how others would view me. Not until college did I finally open up to a few friends. I trusted my gut that it was okay to be vulnerable with them. My Latinx friends shared their own experiences, which helped me decide to become a mental health activist. To show more diversity in images of mental illness, I created the People of Color and Mental Illness Photo Project. I asked people to submit a selfie, including a sign that expressed something about their mental health. When that request was met with a lot of apprehension, I decided to publicly share my own photo. My sign read, "My name is Dior Viargas. I have a major depressive disorder." Being honest felt freeing and encouraged more than 100 others to become part of the project. We all deserve to be open and compassionate about our struggles, and when we do, we become better advocates for ourselves and others. And the last one is how to spark change in your community. It's another big leap to take, but worth it. Itching to find a way to give back and help out your neighbors? Keep these tips in mind, and then embark on your mission. Get centered. Anger may have been what catapulted you into action, but that is not a sustainable motivation. It leads to burnout and feeling overwhelmed, says Monica Bourgeau, author of The Change Code, a practical guide to making a difference in a polarized world. People stick with what makes them feel good. Can you reframe manning that phone bank as an act of service and love? And add some accountability. Make your intention public by telling a friend that what you're going to do. Start somewhere. The first step is the hardest, says Bourgeau. Push beyond good intentions and commit to doing one small thing in the next 24 hours. If you are worried about hunger, make a list of local food banks you might volunteer at. Small actions build to big ones. Have an Insta impact. Too often social media is used to inflame, but it can be used to inspire too. The hashtag trash tag trend is a great example, says Bourgeau. Individuals post before and after photos of small areas of beaches and rivers and parks they cleaned up. Sharing your experience shows just what one person can do. And find those peeps. Sending a check or signing a petition certainly helps, but bonding with a group of people working on the same cause is the secret sauce of political change. And another true story from Deanna Taylor, 36. I went from yo-yo dieting to a personal trainer. When I was 22, a doctor I consulted about a breast reduction told me I needed to lose 70 pounds. I made a few attempts to take off the weight, but it always came back. Then, in 2010, while preparing for the bar exam, I decided on a plan. During my 10 weeks of studying, I walked 30 minutes each day. It became a part of my daily routine that I no longer had to think about. The weight started coming off, which gave me confidence to join a YMCA. So many people asked me for help with their own fitness that I became certified as a personal trainer as well as a lawyer, which I never would have imagined all those years ago. Getting fit isn't a quick fix. It's a lifestyle change. Long-term change first starts mentally within you. Love That Lasts by Jenny Graves. Amid all the recent whiplashing developments in the world, pandemics, politics, one thing has remained stable. People continue to fall in love. Even with the outbreak of COVID-19, applications for marriage license actually surged in some parts of the country in February and March last year. Those newlyweds may be on to something. A number of surveys have found that married people are, by and large, happier than non-married people. But as many not tire knows, sometimes partnerships aren't simple, nor are they static. Our love relationships are always evolving, says Helen Fisher, PhD, senior research fellow at the Kinsley Institute and author of Anatomy of Love. We asked Fisher and other experts for advice on how to keep the happy and happily ever after. The season of sizzle. The first year or two of a relationship is marked by some heady factors: daydreaming about your partner, seeing the best in him or her. Imaging studies show that the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, the brain region linked with fault finding, is abnormally quiet when you're falling in love and having sex and more sex, and activity that promotes bonding. Genital stimulation triggers dopamine, a chemical in the brain's reward system that's associated with pleasure. An orgasm releases a flood of oxytocin and vasopressin, which promote attachment, explains Fisher. That mix promotes this feeling of mindly obsessive love. Now that your brain is hijacked by love chemicals, it's easy to miss red flags, says Lisa Marie Bobby, PhD, founder of and clinical director of Growing Self-Counseling and Coaching in Denver. If you are eager to find a life partner, it can be tempting to ignore pings of concern about your partner, whether it's major differences around values or substance use issues or mental health. Thinking intentionally about what you want in a long-term partner and identifying the deal breakers can help you stay committed to your own needs, if not your partner. Work on your communication skills, says Camille Lafleur, PhD, assistant professor of marriage and family therapy in the graduate program at Oklahoma Baptist University in Shawnee. Before you have a conversation, write down the key message you want to convey, she suggests, and try not to rush when you're talking. Share one or two thoughts at a time, then pause. Understand your true intention and really listen to his or her response. Listening and being heard are fundamental for a happy partnership. After a few years of couplehood, the early euphoria wanes a little. But in its place is something better, a sense of trust. You're revealing your secrets, hopes, and dreams, which builds intimacy, says Bobby. As you share every facet of your life, you come to understand each other more clearly and often care for each other more deeply. When the love goggles come off, you may see things like your partner you don't like and vice versa. It's easy to become disenchanted, because we think our soulmates are supposed to be perfect and relationships aren't supposed to have problems. In reality, all relationships, like all humans, are a mixed bag of good and bad. Ask yourself, is this behavior or pattern something we can talk about and work through? If so, how? Successfully working through problems deepens trust. Remind yourself of the things you adore and admire about your partner. In the beginning, you may have loved his or her spontaneity and creativity, but when you're at the stage where you need to clean out the garage, those traits can be frustrating. Fisher's research shows that couples in happy long-term relationships naturally minimize what they don't like about their partners and focus more on what they do. Every couple has conflicts, Fisher says, and they often strike during challenging times, when work is demanding, financial stress is high, or you're raising kids. Regardless of what you're fighting about, at the core of every conflict are similar themes: feeling uncared for, disrespect, or devalued. Helping your partner understand those underlying reasons and why you're upset can reduce the conflict. Be specific, suggests Amanda Pasciusko, a marriage and family therapist and clinical sexologist in West Hartford, Connecticut. You can say, I'm feeling angry at you because you went out with your friends instead of helping me around the house. The story I'm telling myself about that is that you don't care. Be careful not to show contempt. Eye-rolling, ridicule, mockery, and sneering communicate a lack of respect, the foundation on which healthy relationships are built. Practice kindness. Surprise your partner with small gifts, lend a hand with tasks, or spend time together doing something he or she enjoys. Unexpected kindness triggers the brain's reward system, which is connected to romantic love. And say several nice things to your partner every day. It lowers their cortisol and yours. Here's some hopeful news. Researchers at Pennsylvania State University and Brigham Young University found that marital qualities improve after 20 years. While shared activities dwindle in the first two decades, happy long-time couples start doing more fun stuff together, like visiting friends and going on walks. Boredom can settle in, and after many years, couples are often comfortable, but they might also be bored or living largely separate lives. To reconnect and reawaken excitement and passion, do new things together, whether it's taking a cooking class, a dance class, or going on a hiking trip. Novel experiences can rekindle the spark. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Tony Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m., Monday through Friday. In addition, the Health Department will have an immunization clinic, 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613.
Starting Friday on the Noon Book Hour, we go to our Western shelf to select one of Elmer Kelton's earliest books, Buffalo Wagons. For Gage Jameson, the summer of 1873 has been a poor hunt. A year ago, he felled 62 buffalo in one stand, but now the great Arkansas River herd is gone. In Dodge City, old hide hunters speak in awe of a last great herd to the south. But no hunter who values his scalp dares ride south of the Cimarron and into Comanche territory. None but Gage Jameson. Jameson heads for Texas when the buffalo herds are wiped out in the north, knowing the gamble and dangers that confront him and willing to risk the threat of Comanches. What he does not know is that Ransom King, who has saved his life, will turn against him, that he will have to rescue a white woman captured by the Indians, and that failure and death are near neighbors. Buffalo Wagons by Elmer Kelton, starting Friday at noon and Saturday at 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will soon administer the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. For updates, details, or to register, visit mchodessa.com. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549. That's 432-582-8549. Walgreens is currently delivering vaccinations to long-term care facilities and will have vaccines for the public sometime in 2021. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores will soon have the no-cost COVID-19 vaccine available. They will administer in a phased approach based on state guidelines when available to pharmacies.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 57 and mostly cloudy. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading articles from today's USA Today, Thursday, January 21st, 2021. Starting with the money section under the money line column, three short articles. First, Sanders Vermont mittens warm virus.